Live from Fanduzzi Studio in Buffalo, New York, is Caveman's Corner with your host, Jeff.
Captain Caveman!
Dance.
Wow, that was really good.
How was that? That was better than Ray?
That was always better than Ray.
All right. Hey, Ray. If you're listening, I did better than you did.
Don't worry, Ray won't be listening.
Yeah, Ray won't be listening.
Ray doesn't even listen to the ones that we do together.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that co-host.
He's a 25-cent co-host for sure.
I think I should be the 50-cent co-host now yeah. that I can do that live line for you.
Yeah.
Better than Ray.
Much better than Ray.
There you go. See? Yeah. You got the good one here.
Well,
maybe you can wine me, dine me later.
How about I just bang you?
That's not what I said.
Oh, yeah. I figured. Married life. Don't ever get married, guys.
It's better than you think.
Is it?
Oh, whatever. I'm not even going to go there right now. Just wait till the couch comes.
I know. I know that feeling.
You don't know that feeling at all.
Ray knows that feeling.
Yeah, that's Ray.
That's what Ray is right now. That's probably why he's not here.
Yeah, probably.
While we're talking, my wife Karis is crocheting.
It's not crochet.
Knitting?
Yes, thank you.
What's the difference?
Two needles versus one hook.
Which one's which?
Crochet is a hook.
Uh-huh.
Knitting is two needles.
Which one makes blankets?
Both.
Okay. What's the difference in technique or whatever?
One uses one hook, one uses two needles.
But does it like put the thread the same way? What's the difference?
You can do all kinds of different patterns using either the hook or the two needles. They can both make blankets, clothes, scarves, hats. Check me out on Instagram, The True Mrs. Caveman. You can see my products.
There you go. Good custom, shameless caveman plug.
Custom design, knit or crochet products. DM me if you're interested in any of my products. Maybe launching an Etsy store later this winter.
Sounds good.
All right.
We'll have to link it to a caveman store.
Yeah, we do.
Now that I'm coming back, I have to make some t-shirts to sell.
Oh, we got to make some t-shirts. Maybe yeah. Lovejoy Pizzeria will sponsor you.
Maybe.
This is our first plug for Lovejoy Pizzeria.
Yeah.
For free.
Yeah.
Just to test it out.
They were good wings today.
They were very good wings.
We'll have to tag them in this somehow.
Yeah, we can. I'm sure we can do that.
All right, you'll have to figure that out. You're a smart one. Well, I actually have you on, and we have a real guest today.
I know. The only reason I'm even on because Ray canceled on you.
Yeah. Well, at least he canceled before he got here today.
That is true. Kudos.
Yeah.
We'll give him credit for that.
Normally, I would be here waiting for Ray, and he'd be like, yeah, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And then you look on Facebook, and he's in New Jersey. Ray just checked in at the diner in New Jersey.
Ray's trying to call in.
Yeah.
I don't know about this light. It keeps going on and off.
Yeah. You got to click it all the way over to the right. Otherwise, it goes on and off. All
right. Should I go do it now?
Yeah. Karis is going to go click the light on because she doesn't like to sit here in the studio in the dark. No. While we're doing that, I'm going to talk about our guest today. We're going to have on Jay Wadsworth. He's kind of a renaissance man. He was an MMA fighter. He's a jiu-jitsu black belt. He is a policeman. He makes jiu-jitsu DVDs. He does defensive tactics for the police. He's does a little bit of everything, and we're going to have him on the show to plug his new DVD. He invented a guard, the 96 guard, and we're going to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff. Should be a pretty interesting guy. He can be a little dry, though, so we're going to have to bring some funny into him.
Yeah, just to be honest, I don't know too much about Jay. I heard about him, seeing him at tournaments and stuff, but I think I'm more interested. I know his daughter, Maddie, who, like, I've seen at tournaments, that girl just kills it. So I think I'm always more impressed with Maddie so far than Jay. But this would be a good time to probably meet Jay and learn about Jay for me.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out.
You have hesitation there. You don't think I'm going to meet Jay or get to know him? Maybe Jay just doesn't like me.
I'm going to ask him if the stereotype about Asian drivers is true at some point in this podcast.
There's not even Asian people in Jamestown, so don't even worry about that.
We got to ask him about Chuck, though.
That's your job.
I'll ask him about Chuck and the Jamestown stuff, and we'll see. Let's look at my phone and see if he's ready. Well, I texted him 5 minutes ago. I'm going to call him in 5 minutes, so I'm going to give him a ring-a-ding-ding. My phone is not as good as Ray's, so it could be an interesting podcast.
Jeffrey.
How's it going there?
What's up, bud?
Not much. We got Jay Wadsworth. How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Good. We were just talking about you a little bit. Talked about your DVD coming out, your black belt, your police officer, MMA fighter, kind of renaissance guy.
I'm definitely figuring ways to stay too busy, that's for sure.
It sounds like it. Let's get right into the DVD. How did you get a DVD deal?
So I actually went out to Boston to BJJ Super Deals and BJJ Fanatics as like an assistant in a video. So a company I work for out of Las Vegas, Progressive Sports Concepts, the lead combatives instructor is a black belt also. His name is Chad Lyman, and he teaches at Extreme Couture with Robert Folos, the black belt jiu-jitsu instructors at Extreme Couture. And I worked police combatives for his company. So he was flying to Super Deals to do a like DVD on like personal defense weapons, like knife pens, flashlights, used in a self-defense situation. And since I know his system and how he's going to do it, it was cheap to fly me to Boston, because Buffalo to Boston is pretty cheap. So I flew out and assisted him in the video. Mm-hmm. The owner of the company is a guy named Michael Zanga and Bernardo Fiera, who most people know. While we're out there, we always get some jiu-jitsu training in and a lot of rolling in. So I was rolling with the, you know, the black belt out there and whatnot, and I play this really weird 2-on-1 grip when I'm in half guard or full guard, and so those bigger guys or small, but even smaller guys, but anyone that stays on their knees and try to pass, I just have this weird grip that I use, and then I put my foot in their hip. So I called it 92 because 93, the way the legs are, it looks like a 9, and then you have 3 grips. Well, I pull my foot out and put it in the hip, so it really takes away like a grip. So I double team one of the sleeves so that they can't pull their arm back. So instead of saying 2-on, like one hand on the sleeve, one hand on the collar, or 2 hands on the sleeve, I'll play a cross grip on the sleeve and then same side grip on the tricep, which gives me advantage against a stronger, bigger guy. They can't put their, they can't get their arm back to push the foot out of their hip.
A lot of times you even close with your knee up there, right? Correct, too? Knee with the foot and the hip to keep the elbow
pretty
from coming out?
Pretty much like a Z-guard, a real vertical Z-guard, and I have the cross grip with the tricep, and I play it for big guys that keep their knees on the mat and try to smash pass. You know, and I was hitting all my sweeps and submissions with it against, you know, the high-level black belts out there that are always there training, and they thought it was a really cool concept and never seen it before and never seen it play before, so they flew me out there to shoot a DVD on it.
That's pretty awesome. Did you develop that guy from working with Josh Roth, or was it just something you came up with because of the way you played jiu-jitsu?
Pretty much working with Josh, and we have another guy, Ron. They're both real big, strong, higher level. Obviously, Josh Black Belt took third at Master World, so I mean, he's an animal. But Ron, he's a purple belt. No one knows him, but he would probably destroy most, you know, purple and brown belts in competition if he competed. He just doesn't compete. And he's a real big guy, too, so they stay on their knees a lot. And it's just something I had to come up with to survive against those guys, you know?
I saw Cameron.
And then,
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Keep going.
Oh, no. And then I really started throwing into action, and then I ended up doing a super fight in a cage for a title up in Canada last spring. A year ago this spring, and the guy was much heavier than me. I think he weighed in like 30 pounds more than me or something. And I ended up submitting him with the 92 guard. I had the cross sleeve and got the triangle off it after about 6 minutes of being ragdolled, you know. I had multiple attacks off it, but he was just getting out of them or posturing out, and then he just finally got tired, and I got him with it. So it's really, like, been implemented in training and into competition and really helped me out. And it's interesting. No one plays it, so it's very difficult to defend at first.
I heard that Cameron Lionheart is going to make a DVD on how to counter the 92 guard.
Cameron is going to make a DVD because to counter it, you stand up, and then it opens up all my other open guard attack. So, yeah. Clearly, Cameron and I are very, very close friends. One of my best training partners. I'm one of his best training partners. And we always, you know, bust each other's chops online and have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, you should tell your friends to not plug it on your paid sponsored site.
Yeah, there's no telling Cameron that. You know.
Cameron is the pastor. You don't tell the pastor what to do.
Yeah, you never tell pastor.
Yeah, yeah, you can't tell pastor what to do. They're just going to do it anyway.
Only God can tell the pastor what to do.
Right, right.
Anyway.
So, yeah, that's how that came around. And then, you know, I got to know Michael really well, the owner out there. And we actually are in contact all the time. And he's actually taking BJJ Super Deals and BJJ Fanatics, and now he's making Fanatic Self-Defense or Fanatic Defense stuff and rolling into that stuff as well besides just jiu-jitsu. And so he actually brought me back out, and I did a two-set DVD on control tactics for police. So that just launched also.
That's very cool.
So you really have three DVDs out now?
I have two right now.
Wow.
There's going to be a self-defense one coming out, but the two that are out right now are basically police control and custody, taking subjects into custody with one officer or with two officers, what they're supposed to do, how to do takedowns with one and two guys, how to do it with one person, how to control someone on the ground. Obviously, you know, I have 17 years of police officer experience on the road, you know, foot pursuits, fighting with guys, tactical officer on a SWAT team for the last 8-9 years. And, you know, so I can use my jujitsu as far as an art of controlling a human body with 100% resistance. So a lot of martial arts, you don't get 100% resistance. You know, obviously in MMA, which we've competed in for years, jujitsu, you know, all of that is controlling a human body with 100% resistance. So now I take that experience, and then I mix it with my police officer experience while I'm wearing a gun belt, and I have no, you know, I have a gun in my right hip, and I have, you know, a taser on the left hip, and, you know, there's no rules for the suspect out there. So, you know, there could be two or three of them, four or five of them. I can't pick when that confrontation is going to happen, when it's not going to happen, and I use that experience in how do we teach cops to be more efficient as a profession so that we don't look so undertrained in social media. And that's like my goal is to, our profession is very, very undertrained in control tactics. And there's a lot of studies going out right now. You know, one of the last ones that came out recently showed that, you know, you have your pain compliance techniques, which has been like years and years, you know, like knee strikes and pressure points and baton strikes. And, you know, those tactics right now with all the meth and all the heroin and all your mental health diseases, and you got military people coming back, and, you know, those guys don't feel pain if they're on alcohol or drugs, or some of the mental health guys, they don't feel pain. So your pain compliance techniques are only showing to be about 33% efficient. And what I always tell people is on the road, when you have a gun on your hip and you're protecting yourself, other citizens or whatever, you don't want to be right in a fight 1/3 of the time. That's terrible odds. So if you look at the studies coming back with control tactics, it's showing somewhere between like 78 and like an 83%. That's a much better ratio for us on the road, being able to fight with people, being like, hey, yeah, what we're doing is working 83% of the time. It's got a much better ratio for officer and suspect injury being very low compared to the plain compliance. So pretty much that's what my goal is to get this stuff out and get it to, you know, officers across the country so that not only officers and citizens, but even suspects can be more safe in a combative situation.
Do you feel like more departments should be not even just requiring their officers to do this training, but pay for their officers to do this training? I had Eric Herbert on. Go ahead.
Yeah. I listened to that. It was very good. Eric's obviously trained as well outside of work, you know, and obviously a very, very good professional fighter. And Eric's actually taken one of my courses, and we've talked about this multiple times about how training is so, there's not enough. Police officers are very undertrained in hand-to-hand combat, which is a money issue, really.
I think we talked about this with the Eric podcast, but we went into if the officers were better at handling themselves with hand-to-hand combat and weapon retention, it would cut down on the number of incidents that you see happening because the officers would be used to that situation. Just like you were saying before, when officers are used to using 100% resistance like you do in jiu-jitsu, just like you said, it makes it a lot more common for them to deal with that kind of violence, or not even violence, but physicality. And when you're used to it, you don't have such a high level of adrenaline, and you're a little bit more aware, and I think you can be a little bit more rational under that kind of pressure. So I
100% agree with that. I mean, you know, guys that train outside of work consistently, you can see that they handle themselves much better on the street, and they, you know, my favorite saying, Jeff, is what is a reason for an overuse of force? And I always say an initial underuse of force always leads to an overuse of force. So if I come in, say there's a guy that's coming in very combative at me, and I come in like real timid, like just trying to grab a hold of him, and he can push away or pull away from me, I automatically have to go way up in force to try to take this guy in, rather than meet force at the level that he's at and end it right away. You're going to see a lot less use of force incidents or incidents that are making social media. And, you know, the thing with social media and, like, stuff is everyone, you know, looking at social media, it's like, oh, everyone doesn't like the police, and, you know, the police are abusing, you know, citizens and suspects. And it's not really true if you look at, like, the overall spectrum. I think police are really well taken in the U.S. It's just the news doesn't portray all the good incidents that the police do. The only incidents that you see in social media are the negative ones. So there was one, and they haven't done one since, but a guy did a slideshow almost, and used like 2012 data for the most part, because I think that was the closest data you could get for all around for his study as far as the population in the U.S. versus the population of police officers versus the amount of citizen contact, good, bad, or indifferent, every documented citizen contact versus how many were force was used versus how many reported overuse of force. And it came back to like just the ones that reported overuse of force, whether it was found or not found that there's an overuse of force, was like 0.00149%. So like if you take all police contact in 1 year to what actually is, you know, so if you're looking at social media, you say like, oh, you see 10, 12 incidents in a year that are real bad. If you multiply how many incidents police actually handled besides those, the ratio is so low, you know, that it's people are like making it more of a big deal than it is as far as like police brutality. I mean, as an overall spectrum, the amount of citizen contacts police officers make for the overuse of force ones is so low that you wouldn't even believe it. I'll try to find that study and send it to you so you can have it. But, you know, what makes the news? The news makes those very minimal things make the news, you know? So that's where, you know, the black eyes come from. And, you know, I'm not like saying that, you know, some of these incidents aren't because of a lack of training, but a lot of the times it's not the guys, it's the cities and these towns. They don't properly train their officers. You know, the officers aren't being trained in defensive tactics. The state mandates you to qualify with your gun a certain amount of times per year. There is no qualification or no, there's no amount that they have to do TT. I travel the country and teach TT weekly and monthly, and you wouldn't believe the amount of people. I always ask the question, how many people in here have a DT refresher for their department? And I would say half and half, Jeff, out of all the people I train, their departments don't do a yearly refresher. And the ones that do have like 4 to 8 hours, I would say, is the average per year of hands-on training.
What do you think the requirement should be for a police officer? How many hours of training should they have, weekly, monthly, or yearly?
Well, you and I both know that if we train 8 hours of jujitsu and then we don't train for the next year and we get into a confrontation, that technique's going to fail, right? Your technique is going to fail. So it should be mandated that, you know, there's much higher training. What a good amount would be, I would obviously say, you know, training every month, but you know, where's the money in the budget, the manpower? That it doesn't happen. So it's like they can't force guys to train outside of work. People don't want to train outside of work because they don't want to get hurt. But, you know, a lot of times I tell people the guys that do train outside of work don't find themselves in these situations. You know, and they're confident they train outside of work so that they can go home to their families or that they can go. I don't know one police officer. I've never worked with one police officer or interviewed or trained one police officer that says, I want to go out there and I want to beat someone up today. I've never heard anyone say that. I don't believe anyone of the guys I work with had that thought in their head that I want to go out there and I want to hurt a bad guy today. I don't believe that. I've never heard anyone say that. Unfortunately, it's the suspect's actions that put police in bad situations. So then once they're in those situations, do they have the proper training or are they comfortable hand-to-hand to use the right force necessary? And when they aren't, an overuse of force sometimes comes. Now, most of the time, and probably almost every time, the easy, simple action would be if the officer tells you that you're under arrest or around, then you do so and you fight it in court. That's what the law says to do. So I'm not making excuses for the suspects or the citizens that make poor decisions. What I'm saying is that would be an easy solve, but we all know that'll never happen. So yeah, I believe that they need more training. They need to have a mandated number of hours of hands-on DT training. I believe they do. And at some point, hopefully they will. Right now, I got hired out by the Department of Criminal Justice to read the curriculum for defensive tactics instructor course. So in New York State, you have to go through a DCJS course to be certified to teach defensive tactics in the academy or to your department. And through a bunch of interviews and meetings and running them through my system, they picked me to redo that. And I just passed September 6th, and I ran a bunch of pilot courses in August. And now, starting this week, 2 days every week, I'm traveling the state, recertifying the defensive tactics instructors that are already certified in the new curriculum before January 2018. After that, then we'll work on the 5-day course where if someone's going to become a defensive tactics instructor, they have to go through the 5-day course rather than the 2-day research. So then I'll be teaching those. So I'm kind of busy right now. It's crazy.
So from everything you just said, it sounds like, you know, you must get a lot of support from your own department on this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I'm not going to name the department, but I obviously work for an urban city department in Western New York. And obviously, while interviewing with DCGS or doing the phone conversations and phone conferences, my chief was part of those and is fully backed us going. And the reason being is, when our chief became chief, he wanted me to change our program. So we've been doing this system since 2011, 2012 at RPD. Mm-hmm. So the system I created is been in, we've been training this for 4 or 5 years now. Mm-hmm. And we've had very, very high percentage of arrest rate with it without suspect officer injury. And I don't think we've even had any use of force incidents, like where someone said we've used too much force on it. I don't think we've had any formal complaints of it. And it's because we use one or two officers, you know, to take the guy down to control him right away. And then once he's controlled, then we go to work getting him into custody. Because as police officers and law enforcement, our goal is custody and control with a reasonable amount of force. So that's our goal. Our goal isn't to armbar people, not to triangle people. It's not to punch people. It's not to kick people, right? Could that stuff happen in a full-out fight? Yeah, it may. But our goal is to take someone into custody with a reasonable amount of force necessary. So if everyone turned around and put their hands behind their back when we ask them to, when they're under arrest, that would be their most reasonable, you know, force would just be putting handcuffs on. And that would be a great world, because then they have the opportunity to fight it if they don't believe that wrong in court. But fortunately, you guys obviously know that doesn't happen that way all the time. I mean, and on a daily, weekly basis, we're, you know, having resisting arrest and obstructing. I mean, people wouldn't believe how often it happens. It happens on a daily basis at our department. You know, and that being said, it shows how well the system works, because if it's happening on a daily and multiple times a week basis, and we've had no overuse of force reports filed against us, we must be doing something right as far as training.
Sounds good. I think it's a good thing that David Whitman doesn't live in your neighborhood. Otherwise, your use of force complaints might go up a little bit. I don't know if you know David Whitman or not.
I don't.
Perfect.
Wait, you don't know David Whitman?
I don't. Maybe. I just, it's not coming to mind that if I do or not.
You have to go back and listen to the David Whitman podcast I had a little while ago. I'd like to have the two yous on at one time. That'd be a very interesting podcast.
It
should be, yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely a cop hater. I would actually like to do a show one time with a police show and talk about all this stuff. I don't want to get too much more into it because I want to get back to jiu-jitsu in a minute. But I think if I'm elected as mayor of Buffalo, I would give back to all the Buffalo police officers 100% tax write-off for every penny they spent on self-defense training. So Jeff Dent's for mayor of Buffalo.
Jeff Dent's for mayor.
Yeah.
I'm behind the blue shield.
That would help in more things. You know, like I said, it's not that these guys are going out there saying they want to use overuse of force. I just feel like sometimes, you know, with all the drugs, and sometimes guys are just bigger and stronger and faster. And, you know, you don't know who has a gun. You don't know who has a knife. And, you know, you have to make those split second decisions, tell a guy to pull his hands out of his pockets and he's not listening to you. And then you pull it out real fast with a cell phone. You do a split second to make the decision whether you're shooting him or not. You have to make sure that your positive target, you know, identification is a phone and not a gun. And that's like a split second decision between life and death, you know? So people don't understand how difficult that job is. And if you don't train consistently, it makes it even worse.
There's a great news article. I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was 60 Minutes or CNN or something, but one of the reporters that was really trashing the police about one of the shootings where it was a kid that they ended up shooting because he had a toy gun. They put him on a training simulator, and he had like 90% bad shots. He shot 90% of the people he shouldn't have when he went through this, like just the training simulation of it. And he wrote a great piece on that.
Of pastors are actually, that are doing, you know, the protests, are actually stepping up and doing that. And I think it's like opening their eyes. Hopefully maybe that will go through back to their communities and be like, hey, listen, we're putting these guys in bad positions. And it starts with the person that's not listening. Right. So, you know, it's difficult to do. And unfortunately, you know, we picked that job. So that's what we have to do. And we understand there's no people that don't want to like us and don't listen to us. But, you know, I think the overall thing is that, you know, you're going to have bad doctors and a bad cop here or there, or a bad citizen or a bad church pastor or whatever. But I think for the most part, everyone's trying to do the right thing. It's just a very difficult world right now, the policeman.
So you've been on the force for 17 years. So did you start jujitsu first in your life, or did you become a police officer first?
Well, I actually became a police officer first. I started training MMA and jujitsu like in 05.
So after you became a police officer, but before you actually learned jujitsu and realized how useful it is for your work, how was that transitional period?
Good. I always did some sort of, you know, martial arts or training and in shape and whatnot. But, you know, the confidence that training outside of work, like, you know, you don't have to think. You know that, like, trained versus untrained is proven. Like, if it's a trained person versus an untrained person, the ratio of that person winning is so low. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I have that confidence going in, I mean, I can't thank jujitsu enough. And like, that's why I train all the time, is because when I get in these situations, I want to know that I'm going to win this fight on the street, even with a gun belt on, and, you know, hopefully do it without having it come to a you know, deadly physical force situation. Obviously, if a gun or a knife is displayed, then you don't have a choice, but that's not on me at that point, you know.
So once you start training jujitsu, how long did it take for you to start incorporating that into your line of work and realizing that this is something you need to push into the other law enforcement out there?
Probably like 2 or 3 years before I really started looking at how to use it in law enforcement, because that's the biggest thing, is like, you know, you have Gracie Survival Tactics, you know, Gracie University. So you have black belt jujitsu guys who are great at what they do, but have never put a gun belt on and had to fight with someone in the street. Teaching cops to do triangles and arm bars in the course, that's going to get people punched and killed, because then it's going to get bad guys shot. Reason being is because technique fails. If you don't train technique, it fails. And if you don't train with resistance, it fails. You know, Jeff or I could go out and learn how to do an arm bar 10,000 times, and if we never do a resistance, the first time we do a resistance, we're probably going to fail.
Right.
Especially if we only train it for 40 hours once a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that that's going to be a high percentage for us. Plus, you know, we're not arm barring someone unless we're in a high level of force anyways. If we're a cop and we fall down and we're in a fight down, our goal should be to get up. And the reason being is because we have tools on our belt that we can use, and we don't want them getting them. And we want to get up and stay mobile or be on top. We don't want to have a grappling match with someone in police work. So, like, teaching cops is 10 times different than teaching jujitsu or teaching MMA, you know, because their rules are different.
Are the laws of are the laws of physical force use different from department to department as well? In some departments, you wouldn't be able to use this hold, and some you could?
Yes. Let's just say by the state, because all states have a different article, right? There's a federal case that governs a lot of it, but Article 35 in New York State is the use of force section. It's vague, or it gives the officers more force to use in certain situations. Each department has their own general orders, and they could tighten it or take things away. Take, for instance, the Gardner case in New York City. That guy wasn't choked. Any jujitsu guy will tell you that guy was not being choked. He was in a headlock with an arm in and screaming and talking the whole time. He wasn't being choked. The reason that officer got fired is because New York City has a policy. They do zero chokes, even in like a life and death situation. Their policy is no chokes.
That's just a New York State department? That's not down in Western New York, correct?
That was just New York City.
Yeah.
New York City, their general order was, our officers are not allowed to do any chokes, because there are legal chokes they can do. There's shoulder pin restraints. There's, you know, carotid restraint, which is just cutting off the blood. No one is allowed to choke across the trachea like a rear naked choke unless you're in deadly physical force, right? If I could shoot the guy, I could choke him, obviously,
right?
No matter which way, because you're in deadly physical force. But if you're not in deadly physical force, New York City's policy, and I don't know what it is now, but at that time was no chokes at all. So just by him wrapping him in that, that's how he ended up getting fired.
Yeah,
was one of the incidents that he got fired.
I'd hate to try and restrain that guy. That was a big guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and the guy's 300-400 pounds, and you got, you know, to try to restrain him, and that's the thing that people don't understand. You know, but if he would have turned around, put his hands behind his back, guess what? Hopefully, he would have still been here by then.
Karis, you got a great thing about that. You want to tell what you thought about that?
Oh,
tell what?
Karis going to tell the story. Go ahead.
Which one?
The one about the guy that was selling the Lucy's that we're just talking about now. The guy that got choked out and died because he had breathing problems or whatever. Like how the cops are supposed to ask him.
Oh, yeah. So when that happened, my first reaction was, so do cops now need to start, before they arrest anyone, they need to start asking medical questions like, sir, are you diabetic? Do you have asthma? Before we arrest you, we need to have your full medical history before touching you, because I agree, you know, it's a split second decision, and sometimes you really just don't know, and when people refuse to cooperate, that makes it a lot harder on the law enforcement part, deciding what to do in those situations. But on the flip side, I do think that people always say, you know, we don't trust the police. That's why we're not cooperating. So I think, you know, there's the one thing you were talking about, just training the police officers to use better techniques during these situations. But at the same time, I think the community aspect of it is so important. Also, just build that trust with the community. So that is, like, I think Gainesville down in Florida is doing a great job using Hurricane Irma to really reach out to the community with their hot cops.
Right.
So the selfies, and now they're doing a calendar, and they're going to raise money. And I actually went on the Gainesville, Florida police Facebook page. And whoever is doing the Facebook page is doing a fantastic job just making that connection with the community. And you see that community coming together to the police, and now it's spreading over to other police departments, doing different types of community outreach with either, you know, the hot cops or the donut trail thing that I saw recently.
Yep.
So I think that really is part of that, in terms of the both sides of the issues. So I think that you guys are doing a great job.
You know, like, that is huge, like the community policing aspect. And I know, like, all around the country, there's a new influx of reaching out to community leaders of different lifestyles and different races, saying, you know, hey, let's work together so that you can go back to your community, and you can go back to your community, and you can go back to your community, and try to get us all on the same page, because no one wants this. It's almost like a war versus, you know, each other. Like, that's not the point of policing. That's not the point of being a civilian in the U.S.
Right.
Let's shift topics real quick, and let's get into jiu-jitsu and kinetics and the work you do at the gym. It sounds like you're a very busy guy. How did you have enough time to earn your black belt?
Training consistently and trying to compete as much as I can between, you know, I have a wife, and now I have four kids, and I work a full-time job, and I work, you know, two part-time jobs, pretty much, training, and it's tough. I mean, I got a lot of irons in the fire right now, but the one thing I always tell myself is I'm going to consistently train, because of one, you know, what my profession is, and then two, I just feel like it's a healthy lifestyle. So, like, I always just consistently trained, you know, and I started out almost more training, like, for MMA, and then scaled it into jiu-jitsu. And for a while, it was no-gi. And then I put the gi on, and I hated it. And now, like, I absolutely love it. And now I'm at that, like, place, like, in my life where, like, I love no-gi and gi if we train different rule sets for it. So, like, at our gym, pretty much on gi nights, we train, like, IBJJF rules. On no-gi nights, we train, like, submission-only rules. you know, so like we can reap the legend and do the heel hooks, and we feel like that that makes you a well-round grappler if you can do both, pass the guard, whatever. But in the gi, we primarily stay with the gi IBJJF rules because that's what most tournaments are doing. You know, in no gi, we're scaling up to doing the more submission-only rules as far as, like, what are our rules at the academy. Obviously, the academy is owned by Josh, and then Cameron and I are black belt instructors there. And we've seen, let's just say, take 2009 through 2012, and, like, we could barely get, like, five or six guys to train with us. Like, we would just be, like, looking for people to train with. And even earlier as, like, 07, we were just looking for people to train with, you know? And now, you know, our mats are packed every night. You know, we're putting 20 people, 30 people on the mat every night. So it's awesome to see, like, jiu-jitsu in this area grow and, like, all the Buffalo gyms. Like, how many black belts are running gyms now in Buffalo, which gives people more of an opportunity to train than just having one place, you know, to go. So I think if there's five or six places across, you know, Western New York where people don't got to drive so far, maybe there'll be more opportunity for them to train with a busy schedule, you know?
For sure. It's definitely.
So I just trained all the time whenever I could get time. If I was working 3 to 11s, it's get up in the morning, go train. You know, when I was working nights, it was, you know, either train 9 in the morning or sleep and then go train in the evening. Working days, it's, you know, train in the evening or train on my days off or just whenever I could. Like now I'm teaching these defensive tactics courses all over the place. So there's a lot of police officers now that are training outside of work. I mean, the percentage is still low, but as far as defensive tactics, the percentage is starting to come up. So I'm always telling those guys, hey, bring your gi, bring your no-gi stuff. At lunch, we'll train for a half hour and then we'll eat real quick and then we'll go back to gi training. So like, when I'm gone and I don't have time to train, we're training at lunchtime. You know, we're training DT for 8 hours and we're doing jiu-jitsu on our break. You know, so it's like constantly like just finding that time to train, whether it's a half hour or an hour. It's just like staying consistent is the hugest key. If you can just stay consistent, whether your goal is to compete all the time or not compete all the time, if you can pick however many days a week for whatever your goal is, just keep consistent on that. You know, I always say consistency plus time equals success.
We fail as students. We didn't answer that question.
Yeah,
right,
I didn't know if we were supposed to answer it or not. I knew
Jason,
the answer,
I guess I just have to answer my own question with these two. I just want to know, like, for everything you do, I mean, I travel for my work, so I know that is a huge sacrifice when it comes to, like, being with family and everything. So you travel for your work, you work, you know, being in law enforcement, that's a tough job to begin with. And you take time out to train. So how do you balance that out with spending family time? Because you do have a family, you have a wife, and you say you have 4 kids. And I know one of your daughters, Maddie, and at the beginning of the show, I actually said, I don't really know Jay very much, but I've always been very impressed with his daughter, Maddie, at the tournaments. She's just this little amazing little girl that goes out there and just kills it at the tournaments. So how do you balance all that out, spending time with your family, with the travel and the hectic job and training schedule?
You know, it's not easy. My wife puts up with a lot of my being gone and traveling and being busy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the kids all have different interests, and so I try to find different times to do different things with them. But mainly it's like, you know, if I have my jiu-jitsu days, I know what days I'm training jiu-jitsu. So on days I don't train jiu-jitsu, I work till, say, 3. I take like a half hour to 40 minutes to get a quick lift in after work. So then as soon as I come home from work, I have the rest of that evening, afternoon and evening to take the kids to the park, cook out with them, you know, hang out with the wife, do whatever I can. So, you know, I try to juggle it as best as I can. It's never easy. It's never perfect. But I always say that if you want a successful life, you're going to be busy. You got to work hard. And, you know, I try not to stress out. I try to put one foot in front of the other every day, no matter what happens, and just keep going.
Now, how is the training with your daughter, Maddie? Or do all your kids do jiu-jitsu or just Maddie?
What was that?
Do all your children do jujitsu or just Maddie?
It started out Maddie and Mackenzie both were doing jujitsu, and Kent fell in love with gymnastics and pretty much just does that, you know, on a full-time training schedule now. And, you know, the thing with Maddie is, like, she's naturally good at it, and she's consistently trained jujitsu for 6 years, you know? So it's like she's consistently been training, and she doesn't take, like, fall soccer off or winter basketball off. Like, the only thing she does really is jujitsu. So she trains 2 to 3 days a week for the last 5-6 years, and she's just very technical. You know, she's a very technical grappler. And we'll do some privates at home, but, you know, for the most part, she puts her work in at the gym, and she just stays consistent. She listens. She doesn't mess around. She's always wanting to drill, and, you know, now she's training where she does kids class, and to start growing her game even more, she stays and she does the adult class as well. So, you know, training with her is awesome because that's our bond, you know, but then my other kids, I have different bonds with them, and, you know, it's just trying to find time for everybody. And it's tough right now because I have, you know, obviously with all the police training going on, you know, the DVDs, I was going out of town to shoot those, and training jujitsu, but, you know, and I'm going to be 40, so I try to stay in shape and keep going, and I'm on the SWAT team, so it's like, you know, that's almost a 24-hour availability type thing if I'm in town, mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think I make it look easier than it really is. Sometimes it's not easy, but, you know, I guess if you have passion for something, you just make it work.
You came up through Buffalo BJJ. What do you think about Professor Chuck Anzalone?
You know, here's the thing with Chuck is we've had our ups and downs. I obviously did some training with him in my early career, and then it kind of went separate ways, and I kind of went back to him somewhere for a little while. And then, you know, we had a falling out, and we moved on and went separate ways. But, you know, jiu-jitsu in Western New York really started with Chuck. Like, nobody else brought jiu-jitsu to Western New York. Chuck basically brought jiu-jitsu to Western New York, real Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, you know, everyone around here has some sort of ties to him, you know. You take Dove at Western New York MMA. You take Ketri, who's still affiliated with him. You take Catillus, who was under Dove, or with Dove at Western New York. Or you take...
Catillus trained at Buffalo BJJ, too. Catillus was with Chuck for a while, too. Every black belt in the area, except for Mikey Schultz, all trained with Chuck, or underneath Chuck at one point.
Yeah, but Mike got his black belt, and who's he under? One of the guys that was at some point under Chuck's
right.
At some point, right? So at some point, there's always that connection. So I think as a whole, like, that's always going to be like, hey, this guy brought it here. Josh, you know, trained under him. Cameron trained under him. And, you know, like him or not like him, he has good jiu-jitsu, right? So, like, whether you agree with his personality or you don't agree with his personality, Chuck has good jiu-jitsu, and Chuck's always been smart, and he studies the game, and he knows what he's talking about. Nobody can say, hey, Chuck doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to jiu-jitsu. I've never heard anyone say that about him. So, like, if people have fallen out with him, it's usually a personal conflict, you know, or, you know, not seeing eye to eye. It's not a jiu-jitsu conflict, because usually... I've never heard anyone badmouth his knowledge of jiu-jitsu. I mean, have you?
I have never heard that either. That's one thing you never hear.
Me neither. So, like, that's the one thing you never hear. So, like, you always got to look at the positive of whatever. He brought it here. No one's ever talked bad about his jiu-jitsu because they can't, right? If you don't see eye to eye with him, that's a personal conflict off the mat, and that's a personal conflict for those people to handle on their own, you know? So... that's how I look at it. As far as, you know, if someone asks me about Chuck, and I'll be like, he has good jiu-jitsu. Yeah, he brought jiu-jitsu here. You know, if people have personal conflicts with each other, then that's for them to decide and them to take out, not for them to talk bad about people or whatever. I think is for jiu-jitsu to grow, everyone has to, like, in our area, it's small, and I love how other schools are cross-training with each other now. We're going to the tournaments, we still compete, but, like, you could drop into a gym and train, right? That's how jiu-jitsu has been growing now. And that's what I like about, like, the Western American scene. And even, like, Pittsburgh scene out in Pittsburgh, like, all those guys there have their own schools, but they all get together and cross-train all the time, all the time. They're cross-training all the time together. Even though they have different affiliates, they're still training together. You know why? Because if they're training to go to Master Worlds or they're training to go to Worlds of the Pans, and they have, say, 7 black belts, 7 brown belts in Pittsburgh, and they all get together and have a good training together that session, they all got better that day.
Speaking of cross-training, we got to get our kids' classes together again.
Yes, we do, for sure. And, you know, we should probably try to find a location like up in Buffalo and maybe do it like a place where we can get, like, a bunch of kids' schools, all the schools are together and do, like, a big kids' training, you know, or whatnot.
Yeah,
that was fun. I thought that was a very productive day, and then the adults got to grapple after.
Yeah, especially if we bring all the coaches together, too, and we can just have a big cross-training day. I think it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I'm super busy right now through the end of the year, so probably looking into January before I can make plans for anything else right now.
What do you think, now that you're a black belt, what do you think it takes to become a blue belt? This is what I've been asking all the black belts. When we first started, there were no black belts, and to me, when I first started jiu-jitsu, blue belts were like superheroes because everyone was a white belt. And I think blue belt's a little bit different now than it was then. I just would like your thoughts as a black belt on what a blue belt should actually be.
Escape. Don't be held down. As a white belt, if you can escape and not be held down, you're going to be a very good blue belt. Like, I didn't focus as much on escaping and being held down. Of course, you work on, like, escaping back to guard, you know, or escaping side control or escaping mount. But, like, if you say that what is the problem with blue belts or with a white belt is you can't be held down. You want to escape. And then it's escaping before they secure their position. So they start to pass guard, already realize that my guard's getting passed, give it up and start to escape. And when you can realize that you have to escape prior to them passing or prior to them securing a position, it's much easier to escape while they're transitioning rather than once they're settled in. So I really try to push our white belts to try to push for that. Like, don't give up the pass, right? And if you do, start escaping. Don't be willing to give up side control. Do everything in your power to get back up.
I find that very refreshing. I think I really learned something tonight from this conversation. I like that question. I really like that answer because I think that is something. Okay, I'm not blue belt. I'm less than a white belt at this point since I haven't trained. But I do feel like what you said makes so much sense because I do feel like a lot of people at my level or a little bit above my level are not able to escape from the bottom or, you know, escape ahead of time, like you were saying. Escape before they put a hold on you there. So thank you. Thank you for that knowledge. That was very good.
I think white belts tend to focus too much on submissions where those really aren't going to help you if you can't get out of a position or you can't stand up or get to a good guard position, you know. So, like, less focus on submission and more focus on, like, transitioning and escaping.
What do you think about the rules of the IBJJF?
I'm torn, I guess, because I love IBJJF, but I love submission only. Does that make sense? Is that even possible?
It's possible, I guess.
I'm a huge fan of, like, leg attacks and heel hooks and reaping, but I feel like I've always practiced the gi with IBJJF rules, and then no gi I do like the submission only rules. But like, if you look at it as from the standpoint of what was jiu-jitsu based off of was self-defense, then any submission realistically should be legal, right?
Right.
So I'm kind of torn, but like, if I want to do a tournament with heel hooks, then I do no gi. If I want to do a tournament with IBJJF rules with gi, I just do gi. You know, so like, I guess it's a hard question for me to answer because I do really respect and like the IBJJF rules. And I think just because that's kind of the ground of the sport jiu-jitsu aspect of it, I guess, growing through this whole process. And that's what you see. And now you see all the submission-only stuff in the no-gi. But you don't see a lot of submission-only stuff in the gi still, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I think if they keep them separated like that, like I know Dustin Ware, he runs the American Grappling Challenge. He does an awesome job. And he's a George Jujal black belt down in Columbus, and he's got a great tournament system going. And what he does is gi is like IBJJF rules, basically. And then no gi is your submission-only rules. So you can go to a tournament and do both. And it's a really good system. I like how it runs that.
I like that, too. So, I hate IBJJF no gi.
Yeah, me too. I do.
Maybe we'll run into each other next week.
Maybe. I'm still iffy on that. Just nursing a bad ankle and
awesome.
And just I
you probably should have told me that.
I don't know.
So, I just seen you sign up for it in my weight class, so I'm like, it's just me and him. Maybe I just could go up to Kinetics and get the same role. I don't need to pay money for it.
Yeah. So, you know, but we'll see. We'll see. It's kind of, you know, game time decision.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. Do you think you like IBJJF just because it's the number one rule set with the gi, or do you think you like it because of the rule set itself?
I think probably the first. I mean, would there be things that I would change in it if it was me? Yeah, to make it ideal to my grappling style, of course. But I think everyone would try to bend the rules to their you know, strength or their whatever makes them better. So, you know, if I could make a rule set that benefited me the most, then of course, yeah, I would do that. But, you know, I think overall as a whole, they have a pretty good thing going on. I think they are trying to better themselves, you know, with trying to make like the 50-50 guard pull, you know, where if they both pull, someone has to come on top.
Right.
You know, so they are trying to make it so it's a little bit more exciting for viewers. I think that's the downfall of jiu-jitsu is it's a little bit boring, you know, for people that don't know what's going on.
It's a lot boring. No offense. I mean, I love jiu-jitsu and I love to compete, but I wouldn't go watch a jiu-jitsu tournament probably, except for at the very high level black belt. I wouldn't go watch, you know, blue and purples. I just wouldn't. It's not as exciting to me as I would go watch amateur boxing, you know. It's more fan friendly.
You know, so I think like the more they figure that out or, you know, and realistically, it's like if you know what they're doing, you know what they're doing. You're watching it. It's interesting. If you don't know, then, you know, you're bored. Just like ground and pound, you know. People think laying and praying is boring. Well, I tell people, do you know how hard it is to hold down that black belt right there? The dude's obviously doing something right, right?
For
say
sure.
If you had a wrestler and he holds a say you have a wrestler on top of a jiu-jitsu black belt, which happens a lot, right? That's the stylistic matchup, and that wrestler ends up holding him down for three rounds and landing some punches and defending all his submissions. You know how hard it is to not get submitted by that guy, or how hard it is to not let that guy stand up or sweep you? And he did that for three rounds. That's right?
Yeah, it's incredible. And you don't see it.
I guess it's just how you look at it.
Right.
Right.
I'm just saying, I think they need to open up the rules a little bit more so there's a little bit more action. Because in the gi especially, it's hard. You can't, when you're sitting in a crowd, you can't even really see the grips. I mean, it's different for us because most of the time we're down right on the ropes and we can see actually what's going on. But when you're sitting in the stands, you can't really see the grips happening a lot too, and we just need to work and make it a little bit more fan friendly. Maybe get big monitor or something, you know, especially at the elite levels.
Yeah, or you know, maybe put a rule in where you stand them back up if it's a stall like they do in MMA more often in jiu-jitsu.
Right. Definitely. And I always think that a turnover should count for points, even though it's not a sweep or anything. I think you should score when you're from bottom to top. And I think they should
like a sweep. Like instead of calling it a sweep, just call it a reversal.
Right. Or just give you points for position. So when you go from bottom side, you know, when you're underneath in side control and you roll the guy and you're on top in side control, you get the side control points or something, as opposed to like pass points. Yep. So just a couple things to tighten it up to make it a little bit more scoring friendly, because, you know, just like football and basketball, the more you score, the more fans are going to be into it. I think personally.
Just like what the NFL does, you know.
Right.
Now the kickoffs come to 25 and everything to make it more offensive because it's more exciting, more people watch.
Exactly. Yep. Oh, my God. Let's not talk about football. The Bills were awful today. Jeez.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Zay Jones has got to feel like a policeman today.
Speaking of those father duties, I got to get these two kids into the shower and help that wife get them put to bed before it's too late here. So I appreciate you guys having me come on. People want to hit up my Facebook page or Instagram or whatever. I got the 92 guard DVDs on there for sale. And then you also find it at BGA Fanatics. So super deal. The same with the police one.
Real quick before you go, is there a website you can give out that people can just go check out?
Yep, they just got to go to BJJ Fanatics and then search for my DVD.
It'd just be BJJFanatics.com then?
Yep, and okay. I can actually copy the link and the two links and actually post them on your Facebook page if you want to somehow put them in your podcast.
Yeah.
The actual links.
When I post it, and just post on the Caveman one, and then the link will follow it around.
Okay, sounds good.
Sounds good. Thank you for your time, Mr. Wildworth. Right.
Thank you for your wisdom, the black belt wisdom. I relearned a lot. Thank you.
And okay, I appreciate it. Thanks,
make sure
guys.
You check it out. We might have a Wadsworth Dens face-off coming soon.
All right, sounds good.
Catch you later, Jay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. There we have it. Black belt Jay Wadsworth. Policeman Jay Wadsworth. MMA fighter Jay Wadsworth. They were all in the house today.
Right. You know, that went a little different than I thought that was going to be.
Now you know Jay pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to talk about that whole police piece. You know, I think he's doing some great work out there, training police officers. I think law enforcement overall needs to learn how to, you know, help themselves, really, defend themselves and do it in the proper way. You know, obviously, I was kind of joking around when that whole New York thing happened with the suspect dying because he had asthma. And then, you know, that what do we expect police to do to really start asking for medical histories before the police do anything? I think a lot of people really don't get it. Sometimes it is a split second decision that you have to make that call.
I would still love to get Mustafa McBride in here with David Whitman, Eric Herbert, and Jay Wadsworth, and just have a discussion about police. We might have to arrest and take Whitman out of here before it was over.
I was going to say, there would be a lot of F-bomb dropped.
But no, Dave can make some really good points, too, when he's not going crazy.
Right. Make sure he's not on drugs.
Yeah, we'll have to
give him brain drugs.
Yeah, we'll have to give him some Ritalin or some weed or something so he can be a little relaxed. But I think that'd be great. And Mustafa would have some great points. He's a great debater. I've wanted to have them guys on for a long time now.
Yeah.
I think Mustafa and Eric could go a long way towards curbing the violence in that area.
Right. But I do think that whatever Jay's talking about, and I know Herbert talks about kind of the same thing. And a few other people we know in the jiu-jitsu community who are in law enforcement really have been doing great work in terms of, you know, teaching their colleagues how to do this the proper way, how to, you know, arrest people with the least amount of force. I think that's great. But I really think in the parallel, we really need to talk about law enforcement in the community. You know, we can't just work on something on the one end because there are so much mistrust of the police force right now. Whatever, you know, Jay's saying, I understand what Jay's saying on the social media. You see those negativities really in comparison in general is a small percentage of the negative things. But when people are looking at it, that's not what they're thinking. Most people are not thinking about statistics. So building that trust, going out there and helping the community, which I think whatever the Gainesville Police Department is doing is great. I think they did it kind of not on purpose, but it turned out to be something fantastic. And I think that's more, you know, on parallel, they have the police departments, the law enforcement agencies really need to go out there and do in parallel, train better on their end, also reaching out to the community in a better way.
I know you don't really listen to my podcast either.
I don't.
But
I listen to some of it.
Me and Eric talked about this a lot, and the second time he's here, when we did part two of the Eric thing, we talked a lot about police relations, and we got really pretty deep into the topic. But
maybe I'll go back and listen to that
one. Yeah, one thing we talked about a little bit, and we just touched on it on that podcast, was when one officer does something really bad, it puts a bad light on a lot of people. There's a lot of eyes. It only takes one person to fuck up, and it reflects on a lot of people all over the place. Can you imagine another profession where one person fucks up and there's that much hatred toward the entire profession? It doesn't really happen. And it's got to be so hard to vet out all these bad people that were original police, because policing is such a hard job and so many split-second decisions. Eventually, you're going to have people that succumb to some of the stress of the job.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, you see the traffic control guys go freaky every now and then, too. Sooner or later, someone's going to crack, and it's just that one cracking can mess everything up for everybody everywhere.
Right. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that news reporter who tried out the police simulation thing.
Yeah.
And 95%, this person shoot at the wrong person, shoot at a civilian in a simulation.
Yeah, wrongful shots, yeah.
Right. So I've always been, in my own line of work, I've always been a big proponent of cross-training. Most people are scared of cross-training because people feel like other people are trying to take their jobs when you cross-train. But I think it's important because that makes us understand each other better. Now, when it comes to law enforcement, it's a little more difficult to cross-train our civilians with police officers. Obviously, law enforcement agents needs a whole different set of requirements. But I think there are certain things we can let the community to try out and let them see that it is not as easy as they say, well, you did that wrong. It's so much easier to be the, what do you call, the easy chair coach, the armchair coach, where you can just say, you know, even watching football, right? People was like,
oh, Zay Jones, jeez, catch the ball.
Right,
Jesus Christ.
You know, how many people criticize the quarterback? They didn't throw the ball the right way. They shouldn't have run that ball. They should have thrown it to the other guy. But until you are there, you really don't know. Until you throw that ball, until you're under that pressure, you really don't know. It's so much easier for us to just sit around and say Jones should have caught that ball, but we are not the rookie on the team that is under that pressure with the 10 seconds left and 1 point winning opportunity.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It is tough. Happy birthday to Forrest Dens.
Happy birthday to Forrest Dens. It's tough to grow up. Forrest had a tough year, but hopefully this new year will bring some new perspective in his life.
Yeah. And maybe Alexa's his girlfriend.
What? Who's his girlfriend?
Alexa.
Alexa is his girlfriend.
Yeah.
He does enjoy playing with Alexa.
Alexa, play 21 Pilots.
Yeah.
So when he listens to this, Alexa's going to play 21 Pilots.
Yeah. Alexa, volume up.
Alexa, volume up.
There you go. Now the whole house is going to be filled with 21 Pilots.
Yeah. Why don't you get the podcast playing on Alexa?
You can. Oh, I couldn't do it for some reason.
Yeah, you got to download the Podbean app.
No.
The app, not just the thing.
We'll find it.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out, Jeff.
You got to give me ratings. I need ratings.
Listen, I'm a better co-host than Ray. I did the opening line better than Ray.
You did do the opening line. Let's see how you do the closing line, because I have your notes over here.
Okay, and I also asked questions to our guest. I didn't just go like, I didn't just make sounds. I asked questions. I also, what did I do?
You know what I fucked up today?
What?
Normally I put my notes on the phone, like I did today.
Right.
But today we used my phone for the conversation. I couldn't get into my notes.
Oh. Yeah, well, you should have thought that out better. Oh, maybe if Ray didn't cancel. Yeah.
If Ray didn't cancel, it would have been fine. It would have been just like every other podcast. I could open up my phone, look at my notes.
Ray, you owe me.
Yeah.
I have to come in just because you didn't want to come in.
Mm-hmm.
See? I hope at least you're on a hot date with your girlfriend or something.
He's probably sitting on the couch. That's a problem. That's usually why he doesn't show up.
Well, Ray, stop posting all that nonsense on Facebook. Maybe you won't be on the couch as often and you can come and do podcasts.
Yeah, Jesus. We're supposed to have Patrick No Love Mix next week. Should be a great show.
Okay. I'm sure Ray will come in for that, right?
Yeah. If he really got Pat, we'll find out. I'm going to tag Pat in this so he kind of tries to remember.
You know, Pat's going to be really busy next week.
Yeah.
Pat's going to training camp. Yeah. Pat's doing big things now.
Yeah, he choked me out. Oh, I'm coming back to fight?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. How can I forget?
Vince Ciattoli. I'm going to punch him in the face. Then he's going to
punch me. So, how much younger is Vince Ciattoli than you? Should we talk about this on the air?
I honestly don't know how old he is, but I'm sure he's younger than me.
Okay, just so out there to Vince, just remember you have to have respect for your elderlies.
That's right.
And you got to be gentle with the elderlies.
Yeah, be gentle.
Be gentle, just be respectful. Just let me choke
you so I can win.
Yeah. You don't need it, Vince. You're young. You don't need this.
Yeah, you got lots of fights in front of you. This is my life. This is my one last shot. I got to do it. I can't lose.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds funny, but it's pretty much the truth.
That body is, you know, all the gears are not all working properly anymore. We got to put oil on it from time to time. WD-40. I spray that on Jeff from time to time.
I live on Vicks and Bengay.
Yeah. The smell at our house smells like a nursing center.
Shh. That's not so funny. Look at this. This is what happens at home. You're going to fight again, and this is what I hear.
Hey, I got to have some humor because you know how tough it is for me, too, when you go fight. Yeah. You think this is easy? It isn't easy for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
No, all you got to do is watch and be like, knee the midget!
No, you know what? I think
actually, he's probably taller and bigger than me, so you have to say, punch the giant!
Yeah, look up, Jeff! Punch up. Yeah. I think it'll be interesting after November, once you and Keith fight, that we do a family podcast.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, it's been a while. We'll wait a couple weeks when you guys are recover a little bit. But I think it'll be interesting because it's been a while since Peaches and I are in this position together.
Yeah. And we're going to be on the same car so you guys can hang out together.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been a long time since this had happened. A few years now that you and Keith didn't fight on the same card. I mean, we still went and support each other, but, you know, there's a difference between one of you fighting versus two of you fighting.
I guess we're not going to corner each other either.
No, you better find different corners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're both going to ask each other to corner the other, so.
That's not going to happen now.
Kind of fuck that up.
Yeah, next time you guys each take a different fight at a different event, maybe.
Maybe. But we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But you know what? King of the Cage is a good stage.
What if we fight each other?
Don't you dare.
I would like to see that corner. You and Peaches going at it. That'd be interesting.
No, don't you dare. We would have to be on different sides of the venue.
If King of the Cage listens to this podcast, we need a big cash offer for that.
Yeah, we can't. I don't think we can do that. Yeah. I mean, if King of the Cage wants to really pay up for that, then Peaches and I may be able to let that happen.
That'd be a great match.
It would be, but we don't want to see it.
It'd be like
unless we pay a lot of money.
Yeah. It'd just be like we're sparring.
No, it's not just like that. No.
It kind of is.
No.
That's because you guys always go in the other room. You never watch a spar. You don't know really what it's like in that room when you're gone. There's blood flying. Concussions are given.
When we come back, we're too happy to notice what's wrong with you, too.
We're both like laying there. Like we don't feel like doing anything. We can't really talk so good.
No, most of the time when we come back, you guys are talking like animatedly.
Yeah.
You guys are like...
We punched all the happiness into each other.
You know, that's the other night when I was over there doing Muay Thai with Peaches and we sparred. And we both start going at it a little harder. I had to tell Peaches, we can't start loving each other like our husbands love each other. The love you have for each other but through punching and kicking.
Yeah.
I can't do that with Peaches.
He's a hell of a guy. I can't wait to see him fight.
Yeah, no, it's exciting that both of you are fighting on the same card. We're both worried, but as wives, that's just kind of what happens. So for any, you know, any female, male who's out there thinking that they want to date a fighter or marry a fighter, just remember.
Just remember when they're 40 and they got to shake out the old before they get in a cage. Rattle it out the old.
It's not all what do they call them? It's not all roses and peaches and roses and I don't know.
I don't even know what the hell you're saying.
I don't know what I'm saying about.
Are you talking Chinese or English or what?
You know, when you're Chinese, it's a little hard to speak.
Say something Chinese.
Huh?
Say something Chinese. Lao gong bing dan.
There you go.
That means husband is stupid. That's all I hear at home.
Wu gui.
Slow like a turtle.
No, not like that. But yeah, you're fighting again.
Yeah, how you say little wiener? That's the other thing I hear a lot.
Xiao ji ji.
Xiao ji ji. Xiao ji ji.
Well, you know, get that black belt. Maybe that'll help you.
Yeah.
Or get that win over Siatoli.
Yeah, that doesn't make my wiener get any bigger. It just makes me feel better.
Don't get hurt. That's all I asked for. All
right, I'll try not to hurt him too bad.
Okay. Well, you can hurt him.
Oh. Well, if he hits me hard enough, I'll hurt his hands pretty good. I promise.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Break those fingers or something. Yeah. Break those knuckles.
Then Siatoli, your knuckles are never going to be looking the same again.
Your knuckles
or
are
your
gonna...
feet.
You got to start looking like caveman feet, caveman knuckles. That's definitely not something you want.
No, you don't want that. You don't want this. There's a lot of pain coming to your hands and feet and shins. You better look out. Here it comes. I'm gonna try and get him on a podcast too. This should be an interesting one.
Is this the amount to trash talking at this point?
Yeah, that's how I trash talk.
Like Gray Hand of Shock was like, Jeff is such a jovial trash talker. Yeah. I can't even be mad at him.
Right. I was gonna talk a bunch of shit to him too, but he was nice.
I have to say, you and Gray make a cute pair.
Yeah.
You and Gray are really cute together.
There's a great meme Mikey Schultz made. Got the Ground Force Fights gi and Gray Ground Force Fights gi and he still can't beat Gray.
Yeah. Where is that meme? Somebody should post that.
No one should post that. It's very sad. I asked Mike to do it, though. Mike Schultz, awesome guy. He's actually helped me train for this fight, so
yeah, pretty good. Mike's a decent guy.
Yeah, he's a really good guy.
Yeah, black belt. Uh-huh. Well, lots of black belt. You know, I found it interesting. I didn't quite dare to ask that question earlier, but I wonder, you know, if things are a little different with Buffalo BJJ situation back then, and not so many people have kind of got out of Buffalo BJJ as they had, will Western Europe MMA still only have one or two jiu-jitsu gyms? Because it is pretty amazing the last few years how many gyms there are now and how many black belts are there training people. I wonder if the growth would be there if people like Jay or, you know, Josh and Dub and, you know, that didn't leave.
The growth happens because there's black belts, and when black belts are all black belts, they see things different ways. And they're like, I don't have to put up with your black belt bullshit. I can go have my own gym and have my own black belt bullshit over there.
Right.
That's kind of how it works. I mean, that's just the history of jiu-jitsu and, you know, really all martial arts.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It always comes down to politics when you get enough people.
Yeah. But, you know, I completely agree with what Jay said about Chuck. You know, no one have ever bad talk about Chuck's ability in jiu-jitsu. You know, he is a great jiu-jitsu instructor.
I was really hoping you'd go into the Facebook stuff about, you know,
no,
that area.
No, because I really do think, you know, he brought this in. He is kind of the godfather of all this in Western New York, at least. And he always showed respect to his teacher, you know, Gracie, the Gracie family. And I, you know, everybody's different. Everybody have their, you know, issues and not issues. Mm-hmm. So I think if we just talk straight up about jiu-jitsu, Chuck has done a lot to the Western New York MMA area, Western New York area in jiu-jitsu. In terms
I always
of jiu-jitsu.
Thought he brought jiu-jitsu to the area. So far, the only black belt I had on that disagree with that was Mike.
Oh, well, but like you said, Mike really didn't get the black belt under, you know, or didn't train under Chuck.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I agree with what Jay said.
Throughout. Mike Catillus, not Mike Dubb, for anyone listening.
Oh, well, that's interesting, but then...
Yeah, Dubb trainer Chuck for a little while.
Yeah, well, yeah, Mike did. Mike Catillus did. Mm-hmm. I remember him at Buffalo BJJ. Yeah. So.
But he was only really training Ogi there.
Yeah.
That means, and then Chuck didn't like people that didn't train Ogi.
Yeah, I don't think Chuck was ever too big on Ogi or fighting and all that. He's straight up jiu-jitsu person, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
All right, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
You got to do stuff.
I can't keep knitting.
Oh, jeez.
Why? You don't like my knitting?
Just so you know, you gotta do the clothes too.
What do I have to say?
Same stuff you said at the opening. Let's see if you remember. I got your notes. You gotta do it. No free. Ray doesn't get notes.
Do I do it now?
Yeah.
Live from Fanduzzi Studio in Buffalo, New York. This is Caveman's Corner with your host, Jeff.
We don't do that part.
Oh, gosh. You should have told me that. Well, anyways, this is live from Fanduzzi Studio in Buffalo, New York. This is Jeff. This is Caveman's Corner. And we are about to go out of here. That is not even fair.
Yeah, that's about as good as your Asian driving.
I drive very well.
Uh-huh.
Who's the one that had the accident?
Planes didn't crash all over the country when I drove.
What?
I don't know. That cartoon where the Asian girl drives and planes are crashing all over.
But that's just a cartoon. That's stereotype. Asian women drive. Have you ever watched?
I don't know. You're going to get a lot.
Fast and Furious in the Tokyo Drift. There was an Asian girl that drove fantastic. You couldn't drive.
That's
like
a
her.
Movie.
Doesn't matter. I'm telling you, Asian women can drive.
In the movie, there's guys with lightsabers that chop people up too. That doesn't
just
really
don't
happen.
Mess with Asian women. Uh-huh. We can drive.
Okay. Mm. You can drive the happy ending.
Whatever that is, I don't know.
How do you say happy ending in Chinese?
I don't know what that means. Are you talking about like a drama series have a happy ending?
No,
like,
you know,
a
like
movie
when you jerk
with
the guy off and he squirts all over?
I don't know what that is. I've never heard of that.
All right,
so
let's
I can't
here.
Really tell you what that is.
Jay talked a lot. We gotta.
All right, we gotta go. Jay talks so much that he has to put his kids to bed.
Yeah, Jay talks so much we didn't get a chance to. So this is our time to talk.
All right.
See you later. Thank you for coming on, Jay. You do talk a lot though, but it was all good stuff.
Yeah, that was Black Belt Wisdom. I love it. That was great.
He talked a lot.